It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24-7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Second hour of Light the Tower here on the Horn. Craig Way and Jeff Howe about to be joined by our special guest. Somebody, mentioned that apple crisp macchiato. They said it's excellent. Iced. I'm, sipping on it warm. It tastes like I'm drinking an apple pie, but that's okay.
Iced coffee just sounds like garbage to me.
Oh, I have vanilla iced coffee almost daily.
Really?
Almost daily. But you know, iced coffee... If you taste it, trace its historical roots, it really got big like on the East Coast in the 60s. It was a big thing. Iced coffee was big. And then it went away for a long time.
I just stick with tea.
And people, Craig, obviously, from the South, you know, it's all about the iced tea. And then with the advent of coffee houses in the 90s and on, it made a triumphant return. So it's that. CB says, based on the hot chocolate, since I don't drink coffee, Dutch Brothers is better than Starbucks, and they're building a Dutch Brothers in Round Rock. They've got one, up on 183 as well.
Look, CB, in the Pacific Northwest, you'll find you a lot better coffee spots than the Starbucks around the corner.
And Victor from I Nelson Field says, okay, I'll admit if I'm wrong, but we are sure it was Pflugerville. Are we sure it was Pflugerville and not Conley?
Conley wasn't even open in 93.
Conley was not open in 93.
I think Conley opened until 97, 98, somewhere around there.
Yeah, something like that. So, yeah, there was that.
All right, we're ready to rock and roll.
We are ready to do that because I was going to lead into it with this. Someone asking says, hey, be sure... Where is it? You're moving it now, so I'm trying to see.
No, my hand's off the mouse, Craig.
It said, be sure to ask Mike Roach. I think it was about Reuben Owens. But we can get the answer right now, and the answers to many of these others, because our special guests, Mike Roach, recruiting editor, Horns 24/7.
There it is right there.
Hanging in house with us. Yep. There
it
is.
Hold it up for you.
All right. So, yeah. Oh, that's why it said, I got distracted by it. It said, get the cold brew, not the iced coffee there. But he also said, how big a factor is Reuben Owens in the Arch Manning recruitment and vice versa? Are they a package deal? Boy, they're coming right at you right out of the gate.
Basketball. Right off the jump.
There we go. There it is. Yes.
He is a factor. I don't know that either guy is going to make a decision based on the other, but they definitely do want to play together. Both those guys and Jonte Cook, who's at DeSoto as well, have all talked about it and a couple other national prospects. So I don't think that any of them are going to make a decision based on one another, but I think if it all works out, they would like to find somewhere to play together.
And you, by the way, we've talked about this dynamic in the past, but it's not unheard of when sometimes some schools get on a recruiting roll. There's that little bit of a quote-unquote perceived package deal, but it's basically a lot of times, I've heard you say this as well, guys who are being recruited who have committed to an institution on the phone or texting or whatever with another guy being recruited say, hey, why don't you come with me?
Yeah, it's all in person, or it's recruits recruiting, and I think if you talk to coaches, they'll tell you that other kids are almost as powerful, if not more powerful, than coaches recruiting. I mean, it's that they all have an influence over, you know, even like I was telling you guys in the break, I was talking to BJ Johnson, for another project I'm working on. And he told me that, back then it was like him and Roy Williams and Sloan Thomas got together and were just like, why don't we all three go here and change things? And so, I mean, it kind of goes back to even further than now. But I think the bigger thing is when you look at that is when it comes time to kids decommitting, I've heard coaches say it's harder for kids to decommit from their friends than it is to decommit from us.
I believe that.
I mean, honestly, if you go back to, and it didn't end up the way it did for A&M, but the reason why Kyler Murray stuck it out in that class and initially signed with A&M. So all his buddies were going to A&M. Taylor Mack, and there was a lot of guys in that 2015 class that ended up at A&M. Now, Kyler ultimately didn't stay, but had that not been the case, he might have been somewhere else on signing day.
True enough.
So, Mike, one more Arch Manning-related question, and I will phrase this exactly how Billy Joe Jim Bob did on the text line. Mike Roach, with the terrible offensive line play, no development of younger O-line players, and no possible decent O-line commits, how does that affect the recruitment of Arch Manning? Mike, I think you would beg to differ on no decent O-line commits.
Yeah, I think people are beating the 2021 offensive line class, no offense to those guys on campus, Hayden Connor and Max Merrill, it's not a high bar to top, but Texas has topped it this year already with Connor Robertson and Cole Hudson in the class. I think both those guys are guys who I think we're going to audit our rankings pretty soon for all committed guys, and I would bet both go up a little bit. I would bet Cole Hudson probably moves into four-star territory. He is already composite four, but a little higher. His film is just really, really nasty this year. And Texas is in it for probably the leader for five-star Devon Campbell, and they're going to figure it out. I don't have as many worries as I did. And trust me, I was the guy last year waving all sorts of red flags about offensive line recruiting early in the year. So,
hello.
Yeah, I was
trouble
like,
year.
Yeah, the trends did not seem good early. And I think I pointed that out very early. So, I'm not oblivious to doing it, but they're going to get it figured out. I have no qualms about that. And so, yeah, maybe look, they're in it for Arch Manning because his parents and him, they really love Steve Sarkisian. They love the vision for the offense. AJ Milwee has been a major factor in this recruitment that I don't think people talk enough about. And that's why they're ultimately going to commit or not commit. I think if you're Arch, you think, if I commit, I can bring whatever offensive line guys with me.
Yeah. Were you amused the other night when Pat McAfee on Monday Night Football there with Peyton and Eli was openly campaigning for them to work his nephew to go to West Virginia?
Yeah, I did, and West Virginia has offered, so they are in the picture. I don't know that he's obviously seriously not considering them, but yeah, that's Pat.
No, but Mike, going back to the offensive line thing real quick, and this isn't just a Texas issue; it's an everybody across the country issue. It's really hard to find offensive tackle help. Like, I talk to people, well, how come Texas doesn't recruit offensive tackles? Like, everybody in the country wants offensive tackles. I just think that position, and feel free to correct me if you think I'm wrong, Mike. My experience in that position is either you're getting guys like, you know, the Alex Leatherwoods of the world that are ready to go day one, go and start left or right tackle, pick your spot. Or if you can't get those top end guys that are ready to roll right away, you're better off maybe taking a Sam Cosmi that you say, okay, I like what I see, and we'll get him up to 300 pounds plus and be an athletic guy that can move, and we'll have an All-American left tackle 2-3 years down the road.
I agree with that. I'm not sure Kyle Flood agrees with that. Kyle Flood seems to like the bigger high school bodies at the moment. I'm more of a give me a 250, 260-pound guy and let's grow him. That would be my personal philosophy. Yeah. But I also don't have national championship rings for coaching offensive line. So maybe I'm not the guy to listen to there. I think that Flood loves big bodies. I mean, Sark said it. He loves big bodies. I think that's what they're looking for. And you can see it in the way they recruit, you know, after – a guy like Cameron Williams at Duncanville, who at one point last year was like nearly 400 pounds at 6'7", and he's really done some work to trim his body down, but they want those big bodies that can move people out of the way and get in there and do it quick.
Is there a, I don't know if shortage is the right word, but based on what Jeff was talking about there, is there less of an emphasis at the high school level of guys who either play offensive tackle or don't, who aren't working toward being recruited as an offensive tackle?
I think in a lot of cases, like you look at Connor Robertson, he plays mostly right tackle at Westlake, and I think in a pinch, like if Bray Lynch went out, he would be their left tackle probably. Mm-hmm. But he's probably an interior guy in college just because of his frame, and so a lot of times they're just going to put their best guy there regardless to make sure their quarterback's blind side is protected. I mean, there are this is a down year for tackle bodies. Last year was a big year for tackle bodies, and unfortunately Texas kind of went 0-for in that cycle.
Yeah.
You know, even Hayden Connor being probably the tackle body that they got in the class, and I think he's, correct me if I'm wrong, but he's only played on the interior so far, right? So
he's worked a little bit in camp at tackle, but yeah, when he's gone in the game, it's been at guard.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's just, it's cyclical, and this year, you know, there was basically two tackles in the state that are the true tackle bodies, and, three or four, A&M got on to a couple of them early, even before really Sark was hired. Cameron Williams and Kelvin Banks both chose Oregon over Texas, so that's kind of where they are. It's just a shortage in finding ways to mitigate it.
One other thing about offensive linemen, and I know Jeff's got some other things to get to with it, but when it comes to are there things like so many things in the recruiting game are cyclical, is it like that also with offensive linemen that you will see, even with offensive tackles, some banner years, or is it never like wide receivers or never, you know, as much as you'll see with quarterbacks or outstanding DBs, you know, areas where there always seems to be an abundance of those?
I would say last year was a banner year for offensive tackles in the state of Texas. When you look at Tommy Brockermeyer, Savion Byrd, Donovan Jackson, Reuben Fothery. I mean, there were six or seven legitimate, any school in the country wants these guys at offensive tackle. And, you know, we wrote about it a lot. Unfortunately, that was the year to cash in on it, and they did about as poorly as you could in that final cycle. So, yeah, it's and I think Sark's brand of being able to recruit nationally helps a little more because I don't think Texas under Herman was as dedicated to going out, whereas you see, you know, they're in it for Ernest Green from Bosco and guys like that. So I think that's a way to mitigate it a little bit, but they do have to figure out, you know, when it's in recruiting, it's all about like when the talent is rich, you've really got to strike and you've really got to make the most of it. And 2022 in state overall is a really talented cycle. And so they've got to make the most of it because 23, while being very top heavy, is not incredibly deep. So this is the year to take a big class, but you've also got to hit. Like in 2018, they took that big class of DBs, right? That's because that class was at a premium that year. And I'm all in favor of take seven or eight guys at a position if they're all really, really good. And then maybe the next year you don't take as many. And you capitalize on the big end, the high end talent at those positions.
Let's look ahead at this weekend, Mike. Speaking of talented guys, Harold Perkins, five star defender out of Cy Park in the greater Houston area. He's going to be back on campus again, scheduled to, second weekend in a row. Big 12 opener. It is an 11 a.m. game, which can sometimes hamper you a little bit from a visit standpoint. But what's it look like this weekend?
It's a big list, and it's kind of come out of nowhere to get big. We've been looking at the Oklahoma State game as like the big visit weekend this year, and then this week has been, I mean, Jeff, I think I've broken 10 or 11 big visit news stories on the site this week.
It's it seemed like pretty much since like midday Tuesday, like that's when things really started popping off.
Yeah, I've been just getting constantly, oh, this guy's coming in, and this guy, I was talking to somebody about a California quarterback, Julian Sayin, who's Texas' only quarterback in 24 that they've offered, coming in, and I said, the guy from California is coming in, and they said, oh, yeah, Uyangalale, and I said, excuse me? And they said, yeah, DJ's little brother, Mateo Uyangalale, who's a five-star at Bosco, he's coming in with a big group of guys. So he's coming. Dylan Rayola, a 2024 quarterback from Burleson, who I absolutely love.
He can spin it.
He's coming in.
Dominic's kid.
Yeah, right? The son of Dominic Rayola. And he's got a lot of Pat Mahomes to his game, just crazy arm angles and arm talent. Harold Perkins, Lander Barton, the linebacker from Salt Lake City, is coming in for his official visit this weekend. So a lot of big names. We do have a visit preview, full visit preview up at Horns 24/7 that Nick wrote this morning. And then while I was getting ready to come to the station this morning, I was brushing my teeth and my phone rang and it was Steve Wiltfong. And, you know, when Steve calls, it's either going to be good news or bad news. There's real no in between.
Steve didn't call it a chit chat.
Yeah. And so I answered the phone. And he said, I got good news. Just talked to Harold Perkins. He's coming in for a second week in a row. So that one's absolutely massive from a standpoint of Texas kind of seemed out of it in the summer, and now they're getting him on campus 2 weeks in a row.
All right. Obviously, Mike Roach is with us during this hour of the program. We've got some other things. Jeff, you and Snoop, need to do that Supreme Linda picking.
You want to do that right now?
We can do it now or after the break, either one.
Let's go ahead and just do it right now real quick. Let's just knock it out.
Snoop, you ready?
Now, Snoop, do I need to email you the picks or you got them in front of you? Okay.
All right. Now, so you're playing NFL music. Is that because you're doing the NFL picks first this time? Or you? What's the story
with
that?
Sure.
We're starting the National Football League. Snoop's got two. I've got the three-pack this week. Snoop has two in the NFL. Craig may look at you funny, Snoop, depending on which way you go with this game.
I've learned not to.
Game number one, Snoop, for you, one of two. Thank you. At Rams.
Ooh, I'm going with the Rams.
Oh, wait.
What? Just,
you do realize the Rams may not have a running back this weekend.
All of them hurt.
You know, Cam Akers is
correct.
Out for the year.
Yes.
Darrell Henderson has not practiced so far this week. He's got a rib cartilage injury. This is coming from an avowed Rams fan, by the way. So I'm just letting you know that up front.
All right, Tampa Bay.
I didn't say. I'm just saying have all the information.
We did this last week, Snoop, and you changed picks and you went 0-2. So
okay.
You sure you want... You sure you want Tampa?
Yes, I want to roll with Tom Brady.
All right, game number two, Snoop. Green Bay at San Francisco. Packers at the 49er.
San Francisco.
You're going with Kyle Shanahan, Shano, and the Niners over Green Bay?
Yes.
Okay. All right, Snoop, there's your two picks. You like the Bucks over the Rams and the Niners over the Packers. Yeah. All right, give me my SEC on CBS music so we can make these
college picks. Because that's going to lead us into the college stuff. Is the we're still hearing the Pony Soldiers
live here on
Sam Spence,
on Light the Tower
film
on the horn
music. It's there.
That's Texas
okay.
Fight.
That's Texas Fight.
Oh, okay, I got it. Here we go.
There's.
Okay.
All right, Snoop. What do I got?
Okay. First game, number 12, Notre Dame at 15, Wisconsin.
It's a neutral site game at Soldier Field. You know, Notre Dame had the tight game with Toledo, that tight game with Florida State, which turns out Florida State's not all the way back yet. I just think Wisconsin might be a little bit better right now along the line of scrimmage, both lines of scrimmage. Give me Wisconsin in a low-scoring, ugly game.
Wow.
Well, Wisconsin lost to Penn State, but I've been on Penn State all offseason. I think Penn State's really freaking good, and they
look
the
part. By the
way,
have you swayed Kevin Dunn at all, any on James Franklin?
Negative. I don't think that's going to happen. But, hey, we'll see. Okay. If Penn State's in the college football playoff, maybe I'll come out on the right side of that argument. So, yeah, give me Wisconsin over Notre Dame.
This is my favorite game of the weekend besides Texas Tech. Number 7, A&M versus Arkansas at Jerry World.
I didn't know this until Chad Hastings had told me A&M's won 9 in a row in this series.
Yeah, some crazy ones too. But they have won 9 in a row.
So who? I think I'm going to go with A&M just because I think that defense is so good.
And the Hogs going to be without their center and left guard, I believe.
Yeah. And I don't really trust KJ Jefferson, especially against that defense.
Yeah.
And I think A&M can line up and man them up on the outside. And give me the Aggies. And I'll tell you this, if you're into such things, take the under. I don't care what it is, take the under in this one. Give me A&M in a low-scoring, close game.
Okay.
All right, your final game, Battle of Unbeatens, K-State at Oklahoma State.
You know, Oklahoma State, granted, they went to Boise and got the win in controversial fashion. Every game they played this year has been really close. Just kind of an ugly game. But, man, I've said it before. I think K-State's got the two best wins in the conference this year. I think Deuce Vaughn's going to run wild on the Cowboys in Stillwater. Give me K-State to go to 4-0 over Oklahoma State.
Wow. Chris Kleiman.
So I'm taking Wisconsin over Notre Dame, the Aggies over the Hogs, and K-State over Oklahoma State.
So there it is. All right, there's your Supreme Lindum, or Lending Pick'em.
All right, Amanda, they're coming.
yeah, headed your way. All right, we're going to have more with Mike Roach headed your way when we continue with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We are live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Kevin Dunn here for the...
This is Light the Tower here on the Horn. Craig Ray and Jeff Howe, special guests in-house this hour of the program, is Mike Roach, recruiting editor, Horns 24/7. Before we get back to some questions, let's just kind of do a little quick lightning round, because we were talking about high school stadiums. You have been all across the state. Mm-hmm. You've been in big venues, tiny venues, old venues, new ones, stuff like that, uncomfortable ones. So here's a quickie quiz for you. Best high school stadium you like in the state?
I'm going to say, and I only approach this from the way we're treated, the ease of getting in and the ease of working, doing my job in that stadium. It's I would just say Mesquite ISD, because to me, Memorial and Hamby are like basically the same. They feed you as good as anybody in the state. They're incredibly easy people to work with. They set the standard for like working with the media in the state of Texas. I would say number two right behind that, in a very underrated experience, is Waxahachie. It's a great stadium.
Stuart B. Lumpkins Stadium.
It's a great stadium. It's a great vantage point, and they bring in just about every restaurant in the city, and then for dessert, all the old ladies in Waxahachie make like their homemade banana puddings and stuff like that. And they will clear your plate in the press box there. They've got people to come around and pick your stuff up, refill your drink. And so I only look at it from that aspect of ease of doing my job. Unfortunately, I'm vocally an anti-House Park guy just because of the one experience I had there was not great, just from a parking and getting in and getting somebody to credential.
Like I say, it's not a retrofitting experience. Yeah. It's difficult. It is difficult. It's beautiful scenery, but yeah. It's difficult. It's difficult. Sometimes it can be difficult to do one's job. I get that. You brought up Waxahachie. The last time I did a game of Waxahachie, Monte Rager was suiting up on the defensive front for the Indians. That's how long ago.
Chad Hastings a student at Waxahachie time you did a game?
He was. It was the state championship year.
Last time I did a game at Waxahachie, Jalen Rager was suiting up.
That should tell you something, too.
Would that have been against the Jeff Watson-led A&M Consolidated team?
Yes. Okay. Yes, that year, that state championship year. I did not do that state championship game. I was doing a different state championship game that day, but I did do their semifinal 21-20 win over Steve. No. The next year is when they lost 21-20 to Stephenville. But I'd done their district game and then one of their playoff games as well. When Scott Phillips was the coach there. You're talking about press box food. Best press box food.
So I'm going to say Mesquite Memorial again. But I've heard, and I've got a game scheduled there this year, that the Texas High press box spread is
up in Texarkana.
Yeah, it's homemade like catfish and stuff like that from what I hear. So okay. I'm excited to try that out. I remember going to Southlake way back in the day when little Jordan Humphrey was playing there, and they would like carve brisket for you in the press box. That was a pretty good experience.
Yeah.
But Waxahachie again, you know what? I went to a Burleson game once against Burleson Centennial, and I was told they only do this when they play Centennial, but it was... They had like homemade brisket tacos in there, and when I was leaving, my wife was out of town that weekend, and I was leaving. The press box lady goes, "You just want to take the rest of these?" And I said, "Yes, I do."
Slowed up there. You know, it's funny because in the heyday when Plano and Plano East were very, very good, both of them on a year in year out basis, in the mid to late '80s, they had deals where it was almost like a competition depending on which team was at home, what would be the better spread, and there would be whatever chicken fried steak or this one, and then Plano East was known for their deer chili. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had all kinds of things.
I would say also Longview from a food, and it's an incredible stadium.
It's incredibly unique.
Yeah.
You think you're walking into a classroom, and all of a sudden you're in the press box.
Yeah, it's a weird setup, but it's really unique. It's a cool stadium with the pine trees all around, mm-hmm. and then the food's awesome. Like, they've got a big buffet-style spread there in a full-on kitchen in that press box, and so I do like that, I would say. And they've got, like, I'm sure, Craig, you've walked the old tunnel at Longview that's got all of their rivals painted up on the wall with the Lobo dragging them by the tails. And that's a must-do experience for anybody.
I got to look at the locker room set up at Longview right after Trent Williams had donated a bunch of money to the school, and they had redone, like, the locker set up in Longview. I can't imagine there's a better true home venue locker room in the state than the one Longview
had. It's pretty cool. Jeff Howe has mentioned San Saba as perhaps his favorite small school venue.
Didn't have a lot of great experiences there as far as playing, but getting to go and be a spectator there, it's something that's on an old, allegedly, not allegedly, actually really is, it's on an old Native American burial ground.
Yeah.
I would say...
they call it the graveyard for a reason.
My small school, and I don't know, Craig, if you've... I'm sure you have. You've done a game everywhere except for Wildcat Stadium, apparently.
I've been to many, many stadiums. I haven't broadcast from, a plethora. I mean, depending on who was doing it at the time, right. And it did a lot of big school stuff.
Atlanta High there. School has, I think, a really, really cool and underrated stadium.
That's a good point. That's a good point. A lot of the East Texas ones, if you've ever been over to Burkeville, which is way over by the border, the baseball park was more interesting than the football because they had this gigantic live oak tree down the right field line, and it was in play. And if the ball hit the tree, it was a ground rule triple. They would give you a triple. A ground rule triple. That was where the ground rules. If it hit the tree... Huh. Down the right field line, it was in play because the ball would get stuck up there or whatever, or drop out, or take a time to rattle out of ground rule triple. So anyway, how about a Longhorn Notebook sounder here? Even though we're really going Longhorn Notebook full.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook.
And real quick, Snoop, can I get a flex here, real quick? And just before we get back to recruiting with Mike, I'll just give you your three keys to tomorrow's game between Texas and Texas Tech. Key number one: don't let number 13 win. If you're Texas, know where Eric Azikama is at all times. I don't double him, roll coverage to that side, trap him. I don't care what the game plan is. Do not let that guy go off for about 10, 11 catches and 200-plus yards and a couple of scores because he is capable of doing it. Make somebody else in that Texas Tech receiver core beat you. Key number two, take advantage of Tyler Shuck's mistakes. We talked about it last year. Just in that small, abbreviated season at Oregon, 11 turnover-worthy plays. Just to put that in perspective, in the 10 games Sam Ellinger played last year, he only had 7, and that's not counting the turnovers that Tyler Shuck committed at Oregon. He will fit it into places where he shouldn't. He will be careless with the football, and when he does do those things, if you're Texas, you've got to be opportunistic and take away scoring chances for Texas Tech. So take advantage of whenever Tyler Shuck is putting the ball in jeopardy. And number three, Craig, get Casey Thompson comfortable. I thought it was the best game plan Sark has had through the first three games. I thought it was the best called game Sark has had through the first three games. But we talked about it. Casey Thompson executed that game plan really well, but very rarely was he asked to step up and make a play. Unlike the Arkansas game, where I didn't think the staff did anything to get Hudson Card in rhythm early. Get Xavier Worthy involved in the screen game. You got Jordan Whittington, who also get those running backs involved in the pass game. Get Casey Thompson some high percentage throws early. Get him comfortable. Get him in a rhythm. And then hopefully after that, he can go cook. So get Casey Thompson comfortable if you're Steve Sarkisian early in this game.
All right. There it is, our Longhorn Notebook. We have other folks. Point Stoner says, how about Tomato Bowl in Jacksonville? We talked about that. Mm-hmm. It's been redone a little bit, but it's still really cool and old school. I know you've been out there in East Texas before. Someone else brings up Pleasant Grove's place. You've been up there.
It's Pleasant Grove's weird because they're not built for the success they have now. It's a top, like I went to a Pleasant Grove Carthage game a couple years ago, and Josh Gibson told me, like, we've really got to expand this because the stadium is built for when we were 1-9 every year, and now we're, perennial state powers. So it is a really cool stadium, though, with the entrance with all their state championship plaques and the trees behind it and everything. It's anywhere you are in East Texas, you usually got some great views behind the stadium.
You know who else falls in that category? Argyle.
Yeah.
They just outgrown it. And for those of us old school in the early 90s, Cedar Hill was like that before they built the new place. Mm-hmm. It was just busting at the seams. You couldn't do it. So, yeah.
Arlington, I know, is built. They're redoing all their stadiums and adding. But Arlington, to me, for the size district it is and for the money that goes into it, I'm shocked every year when I'm at Wildman or Cravens or something about how, like, this feels very 3A or 4A.
I always think of Nate Newton when we were doing a game. Sam Houston was playing, and that's when Mike Adams, who's going in the Longhorn Hall of Honor, was still playing for Sam. Sam Houston was playing, I think, Lamar, and Nate Newton was buying hot dogs for the entire press box. He gave a $100 bill to one of our interns and said, hey, man, go down there and get 50 hot dogs. Bring them back, just passing them out. Yeah, I always think about that. And I guess Arlington is helped by the fact now they're playing at Globe Life.
Globe Life, and the new Globe Life is going to host some games, I understand, in the playoffs. And so,
have you been to the retrofitted, redone Globe Life?
Yeah,
for
I did
football?
A couple games there last year. Yeah. It's really fun, actually. I mean, it's very easy to they're very easy to deal with. It's cool just being able to go through the guts of that stadium and come in through the dugout when you go up the stairs through the locker room. And it's a weird, I mean, it's always weird when you try to make a baseball stadium into a football stadium. Some of the stands just don't make sense anymore, but I always enjoy a game there. It's like huge sidelines. It's a lot of room to spread out.
I want to get back to this visit list for this weekend, Mike. Again, it's an 11 a.m. kick, but it is the Big 12 opener. Before I ask you about this recruit specifically, you think this is just a lot of guys they want to see up and close what this product under Sark looks like?
Yeah, I think a lot of guys do. I think there's a lot of – so I mentioned back in the summer when Texas was losing on a lot of kids and people were frustrated. I talked to one of their highest priority targets who said, I love everything about the coaching staff, the school. They've done a great job recruiting me. They've done infinitely better than the last staff recruiting me. But the problem is we all saw those guys in 2018 in that number three class go in, and none of them have turned into what we thought they were going to be. So we've heard this before with Texas. We just want to see what if it comes true.
Right. So Jamon Tapp is the guy that I want to ask you about, edge defender from Donaldsonville, Louisiana. LSU still, he's committed to Texas, but LSU's going to be a factor. Alabama's going to be a factor. Is this just one, Mike, where – if you're Texas, you just got to keep recruiting him like he's uncommitted till the ink is dry?
Yeah, it's going to be a sweat from my perspective. Talking to somebody at Texas, there are people at Texas who will tell you that Jamon Tapp may be their strongest commit from their perception.
Really?
But anytime a kid is in one of those territories, I always worry. And I'm going to go see him soon. He is an incredible interview, by the way. He is... it's something about D linemen, man. I don't know. Craig, Jeff, you guys interview a lot of players... Like, you know, the characters always seem to be on the D-line. And
yeah, I think on this Texas team, like Keandre Coburn, Ovia Gofu. Yeah.
Tavondre Sweat. The two of those guys, Coburn and Sweat, their two-man stand-up routine is not to be missed.
Jacoby Jones, like, yeah. probably, I would venture to say, probably I think your best interviews on this team might be defensive line.
Well, I don't, Jamon Tapp doesn't say a lot, but when he does, I laugh audibly every time. I think, yeah, for Texas, getting him back on campus is big. They had he was at LSU last week, and anytime it's a kid in Louisiana, the pressure they face to stay in state and go to LSU is always tremendous. So I think from that aspect, it's just something to watch. But, you know, I mean, that's the one that Texas went in and won off the bat, and they feel really good about where things stand as of right now.
Malik Murphy going to try to do some recruiting this weekend?
Yeah, so Malik will be in town. He's coming in with his quarterback trainer, Danny Hernandez, who's also bringing Julian Say in, the 2024 quarterback. And, you know, Malik is just he's a really likable person. He's just a very easy guy to talk to get along with, and I think that goes a long way with kids. I think there are some kids out there who are maybe skeptical of his ability just because he is so kind of boom or bust with things. But when it comes to just hanging out with him, I mean, he's as good of a kid as you'll meet.
Jeff alluded to this. I wanted to give you a chance to give a little more context and a little more depth. How difficult, or not difficult, how different and perhaps a little more difficult, but certainly more challenging and compacted is a recruiting weekend for a school with an 11 a.m. kickoff as opposed to a 2:30, or especially if it's an evening kickoff?
I actually think that they would prefer the 11 a.m. kickoff, because if you're coming in, if you're doing it like a night game, like I recall the LSU game was a huge, obviously a massive recruiting weekend. If those guys all come in the morning and they all arrive, let's say around 11 or noon for a 7 o'clock kick, and they're going to hang out and do all that, you've got to mix in doing all the recruiting stuff while you're trying to get your team ready to go play a pretty big game. If you can get them in at 8 a.m. and say, hey to everybody, get them situated, get them where they are, go play the game, you've got the rest of the day to go do the recruiting stuff afterwards. And so I think, I know for a fact coaches would rather just not do official visits on game weekends anyways, because it's a lot going on, obviously, and they're trying to win the games on the field. But if you're going to have guys come in, I think they do prefer the earlier starts just because you have more time after.
And I know some the layman might feel it can be deflating if they've lost that game, an 11 a.m. mm-hmm. game. Now you've got to spend the rest of the day coming off a loss, but that's probably not as big a factor as maybe the fans on the outside might think.
Fans are always more reactional than recruits. It's funny. After every loss, there's a thread that'll pop up on our board to be like, how many decommits are we going to get? And when you talk to the kids, it's just like, they're like, I'm good. Like, it's odd, honestly.
Before we hit the break, Mike, so one question on the Specs text line, 337-3776. Texter says, why haven't I heard more about linebackers in this class, as it seems to be the most shallow position on the defense?
I mean, Texas has linebackers committed in the class. They've got a couple guys they're after. They've got a big one on campus this weekend in Lander Barton. I mean, Texas has Owen Carey from Modern Day and Travell Johnson from Arlington Martin already in the class. Harold Perkins, kind of a linebacker, fits the what they call the star position, which is kind of what their nickel or it's a bit of a hybrid.
That spot Anthony Cook plays is a star position.
Right, and I think that they prefer those bigger body guys that can play in the box and play that role. And then, you know, like I said, Barton is very much in the mix, and they're in it for a lot of 23 guys as well. So, yeah, that's a lot of emphasis they're putting on that.
Is that a Lucas Lovejoy hoodie you're wearing there?
People ask me this all the time. It's Louisville, actually.
Fighting Farmers.
Yeah.
My first regular season, regular play-by-play gig.
Really?
Louisville Fighting Farmers, 1984.
This was a gift from Coach Odell over there after I went out to spring practice. He said, hey, what can we do to get you to wear a Louisville shirt? And I said, and if you know me, Jeff, you know me, just give me one. And
yeah, give me one and I'll wear it.
Let
yeah.
that be noticed. Any coaches in the listening area right now, Mike Roach will wear your swag if you give it to him.
And I'll be at Del Valle and Westlake tonight. So anybody over there want to give me anything? Actually, I went to DeSoto Duncanville last week, and a representative of Claude Mathis met me at the gate with a bag and said, stop wearing sock stuff over here.
Nice. Okay. Sock being South Oak Cliff, for those of you who didn't know. All right, we'll be back to wrap up this hour here, Light the Tower on the Horn.
This is the time of the year when families start to relocate, and it's happening faster than ever.
Before we wrap up here with Mike Roach, female listener number 17 says, two of my high school experiences were referenced in 1 week through my Palestine Wildcat mascot duties. I frolicked at the Tomato Bowl there in Jacksonville. You spent an awful lot of time in East Texas as well. I would say you've been out to West Texas a bit too, haven't you?
No, that's Nick's duty. I have a rule.
Oh, that's right.
I don't go west of Fort Worth. That's just a general rule.
You in the I-35 corridor. You're like UIL realignment, you know. It's all happening along the line of 35W. By the way, for the person who said Mustang Bowl and Andrews, I will see your Mustang Bowl and Andrews and raise you a Mustang Bowl in Sweetwater, because they're both great places to see games.
Man, the hottest I've ever been in a game, I covered a Jonathan Gray Alito opening the season at Tarleton Stadium against Stephenville.
Mm.
I lost probably, no joke, like 10 pounds of just that's water fun. Weight that
you
night.
Know what's funny is last year I went to go see Pilot Point in a state semifinal against or maybe in regional final against Jim Ned, who mm-hmm. eventually won it at Stephenville, and it's the coldest I've ever been in a game. It was like 10 degrees. It was freezing that night.
I always tell people the coldest ever was at a high school game was 4A state championship 1990. Westlake, doing it on statewide radio, Westlake against Wilmer Hutchins. Sheet of ice on the field at old Floyd Casey Stadium. It was still called Baylor Stadium at the time. Sheet of ice on that field. And Wilmer Hutchins had incredible defense. I'll never forget going down in that Westlake locker room to record the pregame interview. And Ron Trader is in there. He's like, Craig, I don't know. I don't know if our guys are ready to play this thing. It's going to be cold out there. Did that. And then I went over to the Wilmer Hutchins locker room there, and his name just flew right out of my head. Just had said, "Oh, we're ready. We're ready to go. Can't wait to get out there." And coach at Cedar Hill now,
Carl Slim.
He played on that team.
Oh, okay,
in 1990, they won that state championship. That was cold. That was very cold as well, but it's always – all right, so you're going to be in Del Valle tonight, right?
I will. I'm going to go see Westlake. This has been kind of a game for me that – trying to figure out where to see Westlake and how to get in to see Westlake, because it's not always the easiest to get into Eanes ISD. So seeing them on the road, Bobby Acosta being there at Del Valle now. I want to see what his program's about. I know that he's gotten a little pushback from being the IMG guy, but seems like he's doing everything he can to get people out there and put awareness for his program. So looking forward to it. I think I've always said Del Valle's got one of the best facilities overall in the state, probably the country.
Well, I appreciate you coming in today.
Thanks, Mike.
That's always great. Enjoy the weekend around here and around town. Stay tuned, because up next is Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Have a great weekend, Snoop. Have a great weekend, Jeff Howe. We'll see you in the press box tomorrow. And we'll visit with you Monday morning at 10 o'clock right here on Light the Tower.
B&E. It goes to your point that all the time...